STS is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
FDE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDR is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Right-side patriots have a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Greg Andreessen from the National Patriot and Diane Sorey. Right over there at the Patriot Factor. It's Tuesday night, 30th of August. Welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you today?
I'm pretty good. I'm getting excited for Friday night's show.
Ah, yes, because we're having a special guest, a special friend of our show.
You know, Mudar Zakran is one of the most interesting people you'll ever hear on any radio show anywhere.
Yes. And what's great about Mudar, he's been on all the big-name talking heads. He's been on Hannity. He's been on them all. You know what? It's such an honor that he likes us the best.
Well, he says so anyway.
Yes.
You know, we're so different from, you know, the other outlets where he appears. You know, they might give him 5, at the most 10 minutes. To get his story across, we are giving him the entire hour on Friday.
Yeah, you know, with the talking heads, the real big shot talking heads, they don't let their guests talk. They talk over the guests, and the guests get a little, you know, interlude into their thoughts. But we don't work that way.
No, I mean, you know, when we have Mudar or anybody else on our show, we're not interested in the headlines. We're interested in the story.
Exactly. The big picture, like we like to say.
The only way you get that is to let the guests tell the story.
Exactly. You know?
And Mudar is so good at that. He paints the picture like nobody else could. Mudar is the Secretary General of the Jordanian Opposition Coalition. What they've been trying to do is force the king of Jordan out and replace the monarchy with a secular elected government.
Right. And what he's trying to do also is he knows that the Palestinians have a homeland, and that homeland is called Jordan. He wants to bring them all back to where they belong.
You know, I don't think we have Mudar on the show often enough, but man, he is one of the busiest guys in the world when it comes to the Middle East situation. He's got his thumb on the pulse of it from Alpha to Omega, and we'll get filled in on all the updates, all the happenings, what's going on in the Middle East, not just Jordan, but in the Middle East as a whole.
Well, one very important fact about Mudar, for people who might not recognize the name, he is a big friend and supporter of Israel.
Yeah, it's kind of a dichotomy. I mean, here you've got a Jordanian, and he's a huge supporter of Israel. He understands Israel's right to exist as a free and independent nation, and he wants to strengthen that.
Yeah, and not only that, when what he really wants to do, he wants to, like Craig said, change Jordan's government. But he doesn't want to do it through revolution. He wants to do it through the ballot box, through every legal means possible.
And that, too, makes him a dichotomy in that part of the world.
Yes.
So, you know, we'll get filled in Friday night show beginning at 7 o'clock Eastern time right here on RSPRadio1.com. You do not want to miss that. Now, I'm gonna bring up right now what we've got coming up tonight, and then we're gonna get into quick hitters. Diane, you're talking about energy truths v. energy lies tonight.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
And the lies are abounding by certain people who just don't get it.
They compound by the minute.
Yes.
They really do. I've got blind faith, climate change, and Facebook evangelists tonight.
I got one of those dogging me around.
Well, we'll talk about that after that segment. That'll be part of the conversation because I think it's interesting. Yes. Now, you know, we've got a bunch of quick hitters set up right now. But before we get into those, we've got to mention the death today of Mikhail Gorbachev.
Yes. What people don't understand, they know that he was part of, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. He also was a friend of Ronald Reagan. And not only that, he was the last leader of the Soviet Union. And he was the one that pushed hard for reform. And he worked with us. We got the banning of the mid-range nuclear weapons. Margaret Thatcher highly respected him. Of course, Ronald Reagan did. He really wanted to bring change to the Soviet Union. Unfortunately, in the long term, he failed. But in his later years, he has been a staunch critic of Vladimir Putin.
He hasn't been very outward with those criticisms, but he hasn't totally hidden them either.
Out there. He did a speaking engagement, and he did not hold anything back.
No, in fact, in that engagement, he said that he felt Gorbachev's life's work, was being destroyed by Vladimir Putin.
Yes, and it was. He wanted to bring Mother Russia into the 21st century.
Well, and he did a lot toward that goal. I mean, this is a guy that was revered in the West and reviled in his own country back in the early and mid-1990s and even into the early 2000s.
Right. But the thing is, his ultimate goal, to make Russia basically free elections, it just failed.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but
yes.
I don't think he was totally blindsided by it. He knew that the reforms that he was making were going to be drastic. He knew that there were going to be issues with it. But I think it collapsed a lot faster than what he believed it would. He tried desperately to hold on to it, but he was out of power by the very end of 1991.
Right. What he wanted to do in a nutshell, basically, was have Russia become part of the West.
Well, and if they would have followed his blueprint, it would have happened.
Absolutely would have happened.
You know.
But he was still, you know, even through the failure, he did accomplish a lot. And may he rest in peace is all I can say.
91 years old. It seemed like he would have been older than that. But 91 years old, passed away. And the British reports are saying that it was a kidney disease that got him.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, you know, what people don't realize is because he was bald, he looked the same age as Ronald Reagan, but he wasn't.
No, he was much younger than Ronald Reagan, but you know, eventually those two saw eye to eye.
And they became friends.
Yeah, it was a remarkable thing, a remarkable friendship. So Vladimir Putin, not Gorbachev's cup of tea. Those who understand the way things happened and why they happened will always look at Gorbachev as a key figure in the end of the Cold War that was originally brought about, of course, by Ronald Reagan. So,
yes. Could we turn down the volume on the puppy machine?
On the barking dog? I wish I could. Now, I don't know what he's going off on. He's out in the hallway. The door's closed, and he's that loud. So I have no idea what he's barking at out there.
Okay.
And I fear if I go out there and try to calm him down, it'll just make it worse.
Probably.
You know, probably. Diane's been on Skype with me when I've tried that, and
it doesn't work.
No,
Greg
it
loses
doesn't.
Every time.
Every time. In the quick hitters tonight, we'll start quickly with Senator Grassley and Senator Johnson. They're calling on Facebook to turn over every last bit of communications they've had with the FBI in the DOJ in regard to Hunter Biden's laptop.
Yeah. Apparently, little old Zucky finally admitted that the FBI had been in contact with him and warning him about putting out Russian disinformation, as they call it. Translation, made up, Democrat authored misinformation.
Now, Zuckerberg, in that interview with Joe Rogan on Rogan's podcast, he claimed that he didn't know that it was the Hunter Biden laptop story that they were trying to quash, but that laptop story came out, and instantly Facebook went into censorship mode and never came out of it. So they had to know, it seems to me.
And I can speak for that personally.
You talk amongst yourself for a minute.
Okay. Actually, that's extremely true. I was in Facebook jail quite a few times for putting up information about Hunter Biden and the laptop. This is 100% censorship. Facebook has been called to task for it numerous times, but as usual, nothing is ever done about it. And that's the big problem, is that nothing was done. And Zuckerberg was on Rogan. He was basically saying, you know, what he wanted to say, but the thing is, he screwed up in a number of areas. When Joe Rogan asked him certain questions, he didn't respond, or it was like he had to think about a response. When you're telling the truth on something, you don't need to think about it. It just comes out.
Well, and
he didn't do that.
Yeah, that was, you know, the downfall of that interview as far as Zuckerberg was concerned. He inadvertently told the truth. I don't think he meant to.
Right.
It was inadvertent. And then he tried to soft sell it. And after the interview, he and Facebook have tried to backpedal it, backslide it to some extent. But the cat's out of the bag. So now, will Grassley and Johnson get their hands on that information? Probably not until after the first of the year when they can actually subpoena it.
Or maybe a whistleblower within the Facebook organization will come forward.
Within Facebook or within maybe the FBI, either way, it would be okay.
At this point, I think it would be Facebook before the FBI.
Well, but there have been some FBI whistleblowers that have been stepping forward and handing information to Chuck Grassley, the senator, for the last couple of months. So we simply don't know at this point, but it would be nice if we could get to the truth of that before the first of the year.
Yes, absolutely. So basically, Craig, we have to just wait to see what happens.
That's the name of the game right there.
It's the waiting game again.
Next up in the quick hitters, liberals have sold out the state of Virginia, and Governor Youngkin is pissed.
Absolutely pissed. This whole thing has to do with vehicle emissions rules. Remember, a few days ago, Newsom came out that within X number of years, no more gas cars will be allowed in California. And that seemed to have started the whole world, you know, whole ball rolling, because the ones in Virginia, the Democrats in Virginia, you know, they're heralding all this. Oh my God, the green energy, great. No, it's not great. You cannot ban the sale of cars. He wants to ban them, I believe it's by 2035. So
right.
We have like 13 years. But people are not going to give up the cars they like for cars they cannot afford.
Well,
you
but know, here's...
Have you looked at the price of these electric cars?
Have you looked at the price of the batteries if you have to replace those? It's unreal.
You really can't. You know, you really have to ditch the car.
You know, here's the deal. What they're saying, what California is saying, and apparently Virginia is, at least for now, tied to it, is right. that you won't be able to buy any brand new car that's gasoline-powered after the year 2035 in the state of California. However, it doesn't say you can't drive over to Nevada or any other state and buy such a car and bring it in. So what have they really accomplished?
Well, there's some little, you know, picadillos in that law. It very well might be that you cannot have a gas-operated automobile on California roads.
No, what they're saying is you can't buy a new one. You can buy a used one, but you can't buy a new one.
I think Newsom is, you know, Newsom is an ass, like we like to say. But he's not stupid. He's covered his butt with this. He wants all gas guzzlers gone. However, the man producing the most electric vehicles, the king of electric vehicles, Elon Musk, has said, no, 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 you cannot do away with fossil fuels. Hence, you still need gas-powered cars.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't you delve into that somewhat in tonight's segment coming up here in about 14 minutes?
I don't mention the cars, per se.
No, but you mentioned the fuels.
I mentioned that my whole article is based on the fuels.
Exactly.
But Elon Musk issued a statement regarding this, I believe it was yesterday, that you cannot get rid of fossil fuels.
No.
And if you try to get rid of them too fast, you're going to destroy us.
Well, yeah, and trust me, folks, coming up just after the bottom of the hour, Diane's going to tell you why you can't get rid of fossil fuels.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So you want to stay tuned for that. Kind of a sad one-year anniversary. The anniversary of Joe Biden's surrender to a terrorist organization in Afghanistan. And what makes this even harder to swallow is the fact that the Pentagon is trying to rewrite history. They're trying to claim that Biden's surrender was actually a victory for the U.S.
Biden's surrender was a joke because not only did we basically, we didn't formally surrender, but we left with our tail between our legs, basically, and we left our military equipment behind. Afghani civilians, Afghanis who helped our American troops, are now being killed with weapons we left behind by the Taliban.
That's sickening.
That is disgusting. And for that alone, as far as I'm concerned, Joe Biden aided and abetted the enemy. Treason.
I don't know how else to look at it. You know, yeah. when you turn the major air base in the country over to a terrorist organization, and then on top of that, you hand them tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars worth of our armament, our weapons.
Exactly.
I don't know what else to call that other than aiding and abetting the enemy.
That's what it is. There's nothing else to call it but aiding and abetting. And, you know, Biden trying to take his victory lap and all that, it's a joke. Because I guarantee you Biden didn't know what the hell was going on there to begin with.
He doesn't know what time of day it is.
Right.
You know, I mean,
that's what I mean. He knew nothing. He wasn't running the show with Afghanistan. The generals still loyal to Obama were.
Imagine being a family member of one of the 13 American military personnel that were killed in that surrender. Imagine being a family member of an Afghan civilian ally to the United States. Imagine being somebody who was told that the U.S. would not leave you behind and then did.
Yeah, we let down not only our own men and women, but we let down our allies 100%. And it's just a crime. The 13 that were killed were all in their early 20s. They had their whole lives ahead of them. If that withdrawal had been done correctly, first of all, it shouldn't have been done at that time to begin with, but if it had been done correctly, those 13 Marines would be, an Army, would be alive today.
Well, and so many of the Afghan allies, the people that were helping us over there, translators, so on and so forth, those people would have been protected and should have been protected, and instead they were thrown to the wolves of the Taliban. And right. And then for all these people, all these families that lost people in that atrocious surrender, to have them have to watch our Pentagon go to the podium and stand there and pat themselves on the back for a job well done, that's absolutely repugnant to me.
Very repugnant. And by the way, it was 11 members of our Marines, one Army Staff Sergeant, and a Navy Hospital Corpsman who were killed. So it basically covered military from three of our branches of our military. And for the Pentagon officials to stand up and do what they did, they not only shamed our country, but they dishonored those who gave their lives.
You know, it just makes you sick when you go back and you look at the videos and the news reports of what was happening over there exactly a year ago right now, to see those videos of people trying to climb onto the outside of aircraft to get the hell out of there.
Right.
Never should have happened. None of that ever should have happened.
No. And if Trump was president, none of that would have happened at all.
Sickening.
We should not have left. When we left, we were winning. And this is just another disgrace. Joe Biden, as commander-in-chief, failed those under him. There's no other way to put it.
Plain and simple. Finally, in our quick hitters tonight, there's another gas price disaster brewing. What's this?
Yes, there is. It has to do with negotiation of policy to ensure global and U.S. oil prices don't really surge in the coming months. And here you have to put the three little dots after it. God forbid they surge right before the election.
Timing is everything, right?
Timing is everything, yes.
What are the prospects for this to actually work?
With all the corruption in the Obama administration, you can't put anything past them.
Well, and we're not in control of gas prices anyway.
No.
You know, we would be if we were still energy independent, but we're not.
No. We're still beholden to OPEC. We still kind of, you know, try to make nice with the G7. We need to go back to America first. Not America last. What Biden is doing regarding all of this energy issues is he's leading from behind, because the person behind him is the man who's running the show.
Barack Hussein Obama.
Right.
I mean, this is kind of ridiculous. I mean, you say you're going to control gas prices, and yet you're not in control of the supply of oil.
Right.
Now, somebody needs to explain to me how we control the price of oil when we're not in control of the supply of oil.
Well, to make it worse, Europe's ridiculous green energy policies are actually strengthening Putin.
Well, yeah. I mean, and so are our sanctions against Russia. They're actually strengthening Putin. They're hurting us.
Right.
But they're not hurting Putin at all. And right. when you look at the energy situation in Europe that you just mentioned, Europe economically is on the verge of collapse.
Yeah. Europe is in bad, bad shape now. And with Finland and Sweden on the verge of becoming NATO members, it's only going to get worse because Russia's going to flex more muscle.
Absolutely.
So it's not a good situation. And again, this lays at Biden's feet.
Doesn't everything? I mean, really, when you get down to it, everything that's transpired over the last year and a half, nearly 2 years, you know, everything was running like a Swiss watch.
A well-oiled machine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and until he gets in there, and then he starts doing away with all the policies and all the procedures and everything that was actually keeping us as the major player on the world stage. You do away with all that, and what else do you expect but a collapse?
Well, what this is, because of who's pulling the strings, what this is the fundamental transformation of America from the world's number one superpower way down on the list.
Yeah, we've gone from that to being a banana republic and a third world globalist plot.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, that's sad.
We got a chance to stop it, folks, November 8th.
Gird your loins and vote, vote, vote.
Exactly.
Folks, Friday on this very show, beginning at 7 o'clock, a full hour with Mudar Zakran, a good friend of Right Side Patriots, as he gets us all up to speed and up to date on everything happening in the Middle East. Mudar Zakran is the Secretary General of the Jordanian Opposition Coalition and probably one of the most interesting radio guests you will ever hear anywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, it's been too long since we've had Mudar on, but we know that he has his hands full. And, you know, we stay in touch as best we can. And when he's got news, he always gets a hold of us.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, and by the way, in case people didn't know, he's also a writer for the Jerusalem Post.
Yeah, yeah, he does columns over there, and mm-hmm. you know, so he'll bring us up to speed, and you know, we'll have him on for the full hour. We'll take a break at the bottom of the hour, but we'll have him on for the full hour so we can get the big picture.
Right.
We love our Mudar Zakran.
Yes, we do.
All right, folks, we've hit the bottom of the hour. That means we got to take that quick break, get a station ID or two in. A little bit later, half an hour or so from now, I'll be talking about blind faith, climate change, and Facebook evangelists. But when we come back from the bottom of the hour break, it's all Diane with Energy Truths v. Energy Lies. Stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on News of the Day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. If you miss any part of tonight's show, we hope you don't, but if you do, go to RSPRadio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, and become a pod person.
We love our pod people.
It's free. You don't have to give us any information. Just click the podcast button. That's it.
Right.
Couldn't be any easier. Okay, so, Diane, we talked about it a little bit in the previous segment of the show. There's another energy price crisis looming on the horizon. There's all sorts of nonsense going on with California and banning gasoline-powered vehicles. So what's really going on? Energy truths v. energy lies.
Well, let's start by saying the brouhaha over fossil fuels versus green energy is paramount to climate change versus the weather, the very thing we humans will never be able to change, let alone control, for Mother Nature herself determines climate, determines the weather. To control the weather means to control the sun, which will never happen. The sun controls, as does the moon to a lesser degree, our weather patterns and cycles. Also something we will never change, let alone alter. The sun is and will remain the main sustainer of life here on Earth, and life will continue to exist on Earth, if we don't blow ourselves up, that is, no matter if our summers get hotter or our winters turn colder. What the adherents of climate change, previously known as global warming, which then name changed into global cooling after we didn't all roast to death, is that there is a huge difference between the actual weather and what in reality is pollution. Pollution caused by various elements, some the work of man, some working in tandem with Mother Nature. And it's here where reality must step in, for the only thing we actually have control over is the amount of pollution we produce. So maybe if the politically driven aspect behind what's known as climate change was recognized for what it is, a huge money-making operation coupled with the left's quest for ultimate control and power, we'd all be better off. Now here let's understand scientific fact versus political musings, and how it relates to pollution, the real issue, the weather, and the misplaced and over-exaggerated need for alternative sources of what the left calls green energy, energy that is anything but clean, let alone cost-effective nor sustainable, especially, Craig, if fossil fuels are removed from the energy equation in its entirety, the Democrats' goal.
Let's start breaking this down into brass tacks, shall we? I mean, you've got greeny weenies, AOCs and the like, telling us we have somewhere between 8, 10, or 12 years left on the planet, right, before the planet goes poof. So what is the real lifespan that we're looking at scientifically, and what's in charge of it?
Okay, let's start with some simple yet very basic science facts. The first being that our sun, no matter it being 93 million miles away from Earth, is and will remain viable via the process known as thermonuclear fusion for about another 5 billion years or so before it starts to slowly burn itself out and die. Until then, the sun is and will remain Earth's main source of energy, energy that's released into space, with some of said energy naturally entering our atmosphere in the form of what we call shortwave radiation. And when said radiation penetrates through the different layers of what comprises our atmosphere and falls to and is absorbed into the ground, some radiation is also absorbed into the air we breathe, and it's radiation absorption coupled with the corresponding warmth produced, that begins the process of heating up the Earth's surface, which naturally becomes warmer than the air above. And it's done so with no interference by man at all. This is the true meaning of so-called global warming. That is when a political agenda is not thrown into the mix. Simply, it's the sun alone that directly affects the naturally occurring warming and cooling cycles here on Earth, with the sun's energy production waxing and waning in cycles as well. Cycles that affect both the intensity and duration of the sun's radiation output. Think solar flares here. And knowing this should make it easier to understand how the climate change gurus took word semantics of what was supposed to be doomsday via global warming and morphed it into doomsday via global cooling, when solar activity, minus the heat normally generated by high levels of radiation output, was on the downside and therefore would not sync with their global warming agenda. And with technology now allowing solar cycles to be predicted before they actually occur, one can see why the newest doomsday catchphrase, climate change, was, Craig, a safer and more encompassing moniker to use when talking about what simply remains the weather.
So what do we have to do? What do we have to recognize as fact before we can start a substantive conversation about the topic? Because right now the water is so muddied with political crap that, that it's hard for people to understand where the real substantive conversation begins.
Okay. Basically, once it's understood as fact that it's weather cycles themselves that can never be changed, nor can they be influenced by anything we do, we can seriously start to concentrate on lowering pollution levels, dirt and other pollutants circulating in the air, in the areas needed said lowering. And with that being said, we can leave behind the politically generated concept of climate change and concentrate not only on finding workable adjunct sources of energy, not because we necessarily need them per se, but because as our population grows, so too will grow demands on our nation's power grids. And while we surely don't need a government involved in energy rationing, something that could happen if we continue on accepting the government's pushing solar and wind nonsense down we the people's throats, politicians are lining their pockets as they get to control yet another aspect of our lives. The truth about adjunct energy sources, sources the left wants as primary sources, needs to be exposed while we keep in place what already works, as in fossil fuels, whose technology is not only reliable, but well-developed and cost-efficient compared to having to build and set up new and more expensive in the long run sources of energy. Remember, what looks good in concept does not always work in reality, as can be seen in the disaster known as wind turbines. Heralded by climate change gurus, wind turbines are being pushed as the wave of the future. But the thing is that wind turbines are not only a visual blight on America, but from both an engineering and from a logical aspect, the fact remains that if no wind is present to turn the turbine's blades, electricity generated by fossil fuels must be turned on in order to allow a signal via computer to be sent to kickstart, if you will, the sensors and receptors within the turbine, thus allowing them to turn. Simply, if there is no wind blowing to turn the turbine's arms on any given day, no electricity is actually being sent out to customers, as no electricity is being generated. That then leaves sustainable fossil fuels powered electric grids to pick up the slack and keep customers' power online. Simply, wind turbines are basically useless in real life, for they rely on Mother Nature, which we know has a mind of her own, making them but a politically generated folly while allowing our government, politicians, and investors to get rich. Now, two other money-generating, albeit useless, types of energy are hydroelectric and solar-generated power sources. And why? Because once again, Mother Nature determines their sustainability and their practicality. How so? With hydroelectrics, meaning water-generated electricity, during periods of naturally occurring droughts or during periods of little rain, the rain needed to replenish the water supply necessary to operate and generate power simply isn't there. And while water can be stored, there's a limit to the amount that can be stored logistics-wise. And herein lies the problem with solar energy, solar panels specifically. While solar panels do work when the sun is out and shining brightly, they do not work as well during cloudy days, and especially during periods of extended overcast days. And while solar energy can also be stored, the amount of storage space and devices needed to store long-term is not practical for most folks. So, Craig, if they want power, they must then switch over to the fossil fuel generated energy grid.
Now, you talk about the grid. You talk about being on the grid, being off the grid. You know, what about, I don't know, more personal sources of energy that would not necessarily be connected to the grid? And how viable is that or any of these other things, the turbines, the hydroelectric and solar? Right. You know, how viable is all that really?
Well, it's really not, because, you know, right now we're undergoing a push for people to have home generators. And while, you know, those home generators can power one's home, taking one off the grid, so to speak, the power source is gasoline, the very fossil fuel the left foolishly wants eliminated at all costs. Simply, hydroelectric and solar are adjunct sources of energy at best and should never become our primary source of energy. Fossil fuels, referred to as reservoirs of condensed energy, are actually dense deposits of carbon that were created as the byproduct of organic materials formed over a million years ago. Fossil fuels, being coal, oil, and natural gas, have served us well, what with a little fossil fuel producing major amounts of energy. And fossil fuels can continue to serve us well when we realize there are ways to temper down their pollutants. We just need to implement the process of doing so in a timely manner. However, while fossil fuels must remain the world's main source of energy, there is another fuel source that should also become a main source: nuclear energy. Nuclear generated energy, which produces millions of times more energy than any other source of energy through nuclear reactions, is the cleanest energy there is, as it leaves no carbon footprint nor generalized nuclear waste, with an added bonus being that in the long run it would be the cheapest energy to produce if implemented on a larger scale. How and why so? Today's currently operating nuclear plants, and know we've come a long way safety-wise since Chernobyl and Fukushima, use uranium atoms to produce energy via the physical process known as nuclear fission. This is where a neutron collides with a uranium-235 atom and splits it, which in turn releases a large amount of energy in the form of heat and radiation, which is harnessed into generated energy. Nuclear generated energy currently makes up about 10% of all global electricity usage. France has led the way with 74% of their country's power mix being derived from nuclear energy, while we draw 55% of clean energy from nuclear plants. That number, Craig, really does need to be higher, and for the reasons stated above.
A lot of people, you know, when they think about nuclear energy, they think about nuclear disasters, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen a couple of those on a large scale, two or three of those on a large scale. So right. What's the answer to that? Because nuclear fission is problematic from one standpoint, but isn't there a nuclear reaction that's not problematic?
Well, the way to solve some of the problems is first to either build more nuclear fission-generated nuclear power plants, expensive to build but highly cost-effective in the long run, or to move past nuclear fission and go into nuclear fusion, the very same process that powers the sun and creates huge amounts of energy. And the energy produced would be more powerful than that created by nuclear fission, as the atom created and split in the process is heavier than a fission atom, thus fusing them together minus the radioactive fission byproducts. However, while fusion energy is harder to sustain for an extended period of time because of the amount of pressure and temperature needed to join the nuclei together, it is not so big a problem that with time cannot be overcome. But the bottom line regarding America's energy needs remains the fact that politics, fear-mongering, and doomsday scenarios must be set aside to allow common sense and science fact to take control of the energy discourse. What started with Obama's war on coal must now end with the green energy nonsense, for no matter how it's twisted, the fact remains that fossil fuels helped build our country and must be allowed to continue unabated to do so. Case closed.
I'll tell you, it's pretty compelling when you start boiling it down to the facts, and you're absolutely right. You know, nuclear fusion is the power of the future. Nuclear fusion can power our country. It can power the world. It can power spaceships. It powers the sun, for the love
right.
of God.
Right, and that's what people don't realize. You know, I don't know what a lot of people think the sun is, besides maybe some of them know about the hydrogen, but it's really a giant nuclear
reactor
orb of construction, fusion thermonuclear power. That's what it is. It's nuclear in nature.
Every single star you see in the sky.
Exactly.
It's a nuclear reactor.
Right. Thermonuclear. Yes.
Yeah. It just is. Now, I want to go back to something that you said earlier in the piece where you said we surely don't need the government involved in energy rationing, something that could happen if we continue on accepting the government's pushing solar and wind nonsense down the people's throats. Now, with that in mind, we talked about this earlier. We brushed up against it in the opening segment tonight. That is what is causing the collapse of economies across Europe.
Right.
What they have done in Europe, Germany, France, Spain, Portugal, Italy, I mean, you pick the country over there. What they've done is they've gone all in on wind and solar power, and it's not working. It's not working. And they are rationing energy in a lot of those countries, even as we speak.
And not only that, those wind turbines are a blight on the countryside. In fact, the photo that I have in this article of a wind farm, if you want to call it that, I took it driving from Wisconsin over to New York, and it was absolutely disgusting. It was mile after mile after mile of these turbines, hundreds, thousands of them. Half of them didn't work. They were laying there dead. A couple of them were turning. A few of them were like creaking along. I mean, it's a joke because there was not really that much wind out that day. They're ridiculous. They're absolutely ridiculous. They were ridiculous in concept to begin with.
Well, and don't forget, and this goes back years and years and years ago, Warren Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, he was asked why he invests in industrial wind. And he said, you know, the only reason to invest in industrial wind is for the tax subsidies. He said, without the subsidies, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed.
I think the only way we could get a decent amount of wind energy in this country is to line up all the Democrat politicians and, you know, let them bloviate till they explode.
Well, you know, you put a wind turbine on top of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., I swear to God, you could power the eastern seaboard.
Probably. You know? I mean, the hot air that... What we're saying, guys, the hot air that comes out of all their mouths can probably, you know, power a lot of things. But this is ridiculous. People first need to understand science, fact. Fossil fuels are replenishable. They are the byproduct right now of everything that came before us, especially during the time of the primordial forests and the dinosaurs and early mammals. Fossil fuels are just byproducts of decomposing material. That's always going to happen.
Well,
so they are sustainable.
If you pumped every last drop of oil out from under the ground in our country alone, mm-hmm. okay, not importing any oil from anybody, especially those who don't like us, if you pumped every drop of oil and secured every last bit of natural gas, we would have enough energy to power this country for over 200 years. Now, is there going to come a day when alternate fuel sources are available and viable? Yeah, maybe. But
nuclear.
It's not, yeah, it's not next week, okay? And by next week, I mean 2035, when California says you can't buy a new gasoline-powered car, all right?
Yeah.
And even the power companies in California say, if everybody in California was driving an electric car, we could not manage the power grid to charge them.
That's right. You know, that's what people... forget. Here it is. You want people to drive electric cars, but you have to hook into the power grid to do so.
Yeah. And right now, the power grid isn't anywhere near being able to sustain a state like California if every car on the road in California was electric. They can't do it.
First of all, people are not going to be able to afford them. A Tesla starts at like $70,000. The battery alone is $20,000. Electric cars are designed in such a way that once your battery goes, the battery is so expensive, it's better to just buy another electric car. And one thing somebody told me, if there were power stations, you know, here and there where you drive, like we have gas stations. If you had to power your electric car from your home, some of them take 2 days to gain enough power just to go.
Well,
2 days charging. You know what that does to your electricity bill?
It makes it astronomical, even more astronomical than it is already. Look, I know a guy who has a Tesla. Okay, mm-hmm. And it was the first Tesla I had ever been able to look at in person. And, you know, because most people around here drive, you know, great big pickup trucks and SUVs. So he's got a Tesla, and I asked him one day, we were sitting around chatting, and I said, how long does it take to charge your Tesla? And he said, well, if I go to a place that has a quick charger, he said, I can charge it up in about 20 minutes. I said, well, what if you plug it in to the outlet on the side of your house? He said, about 2 days.
And he's serious, folks. This technology is not there yet, nor is it cost effective for most Americans.
Now, look how many people in this country live in remote or rural areas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I do. I live in a rural area. And this friend of mine, I said, well, how far can you drive without charging it? And he said, I feel safe at around 200, 220 miles. He said, I wouldn't go any further. And
I mean,
I said,
that's ridiculous.
Well, I said, okay, where is the nearest quick charging station to where we live? Well, the nearest quick charging station to where we live is 150 miles away.
Crazy.
So you would just barely get there and you would have to charge up. Then you would just barely get back here, where you would have to plug it into your house and wait another 2 days to be able to drive it.
Yeah. And the batteries, they're not that safe either, from what I'm understanding. They emit something because they're lithium.
Yeah, they're lithium. You can't really recycle them. And they have a nasty habit. If you get into an accident or something like that, they can burst into flame. And when I say burst into flame, I mean they go off like a blowtorch.
Right. It's not a perfected technology yet. And this is what they're pushing on we the people. But the reason the politicians are doing that, the Democrats are doing that, is because it's a huge money-making operation, and they are lining their pockets.
Right, and when it comes to the batteries for electric vehicles, there are two major components, lithium and cobalt. And right. China has the corner on the market.
Yes, because that's where they have the most deposits of both, more than we do.
I mean, so, there's a lot working against these things right now.
Yeah, there's a lot.
It's a cool novelty. If you can afford a cool novelty, you know, dump $60,000 out of your pocket and get yourself, you know, a novelty car on the block, then great. You know, feel free. Go ahead and get one. You know, if you have a short commute. Well, I will too, but, you know. If you got a short commute and you want to feel all warm and fuzzy while you're not really helping anything because the electricity that recharges your car comes from fossil fuels and you're just pretending it doesn't, then fine, go ahead and buy an electric car, but you're not helping the issue.
Now, I love my big 8-cylinder gas guzzler because I love sitting next to, you know, these cars at a stoplight, tapping my thing, and I leave them in the dust.
You know, I mean, there's a meme going around that said, you know, if you're sitting there waiting for a day and a half or 2 days to charge up your car, remember, you could have had a V8.
That's right. That's a good one.
And it's
that's
true.
That's a good one.
The title on the op-ed, folks, Energy Truths v. Energy Lies. And Diane, there's two places you can get this. You can go to your blog, Diane's blog, at thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or they can go to rspradio1.com. Either way, you can get the link, you can read the article for yourself, and you can share it everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I want to leave with one little sentence here.
All right.
For certain people that have been absolutely obnoxious because I included a picture of Mother Nature as the cover photo. They did not read the article. All they did was saw it's a famous painting of Mother Nature because I used the word 2 or 3 times in the article. You want to criticize something, criticize it after you have read the article and the content and see the way that the picture was used in the context it was used. Keep your proselytizing to yourselves.
What Diane is so delicately trying to tell you is she's a heathen, and she's written an article about energy and nature and science.
If that makes me a heathen, if I think our weather is controlled by the sun, which is a scientific fact, if I think there are other ways and better ways of energy production, and if I want to include a picture of Mother Nature, well, I guess what, folks? Then I am a heathen.
Did Mother Nature in the image that you included in the blog have chiffon margarine by any chance?
No, she's just holding the earth. It's a very famous painting of what they call Mother Nature. And all Mother Nature in the context of my article means is the earth, the environment of the earth, the air we breathe. It's controlled naturally. It's controlled by the sun.
It's a colloquial expression, not a religious
one. Exactly. Every weather thing, every rain that falls, every wind that blows, snow, whatever. It's naturally occurring through our environment. We cannot affect that. In other words, the colloquial Mother Nature, that's how I used it in my article. I had no religious connotation in this article at all. And the people who want to criticize it because they saw a picture they didn't like, they can take their proselytizing and stick it.
It's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
No, it isn't.
Chiffon margarine, get a tub today. Folks, we got to take a break. Top of the hour. Get a couple of station IDs, and then when we come back, I'll prove to you why I'm a heathen.
Yes. You're more of a heathen than I am with yours.
I am. Blind faith, climate change, and Facebook evangelist. Stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hey guys, Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the Internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sori at the Patriot Factor. A couple of heathens with you on a Tuesday night. Getting you through it. Proud of it. Look, we've got one segment to go tonight, and if you missed any part of the show, you go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, bright and early. The show will be there in the podcast button.
True.
Very simple. Very simple. All right. So I dip my toe in the climate change waters with this commentary, but it's about so much more than that. You know, I mean, honestly, blind faith, climate change, and Facebook evangelists.
They're a real hoot.
Yeah, they are. Listen, the religion of climate change preaches that the world is in its last gasp and that we have but 8 or 10 or maybe 12 years left before the planet burns to a crisp unless we stop drilling for oil in our country and simply import it from nations who don't like us very much. They also say that we can slow it down or stop it by simply throwing other people's money at it. Obviously, that's nonsense. The global climate is not dependent on trillions of dollars of jacked up taxes. Now, I can say that with a great deal of confidence because the global climate has been changing since our particular globe was invented and long before the invention of taxes. A lack of taxation was not the cause for the extinction of the dinosaurs, and hiking up taxes neither caused the advance or the receding of the ice ages. The religion of climate change, just as with all religions, is a man-made procedure based on unscientific or false conjecture to extract money or power from the masses, and in the case of every religion outside of climate change, they were started as a way for ancient man to explain what ancient man simply could not understand. Today, the closed-minded, hopelessly addicted to blind faith Facebook evangelists use it as a weapon of choice with which to seek acceptance from other like closed-minded social media types with which to pummel those who may believe differently from themselves. And Diane, I gotta tell you, to that end, I would give you a Facebook evangelist by the name of Betty Seipert and her post regarding Leviticus.
Well, from what I understand about this Betty, she is one of those who take the Bible literally word for word. She will not allow any inkling of common sense into her discourse. And you really got into it with her pretty good, I'd say.
Well, I'm sure Betty Seipert is a nice lady. Mm-hmm. Okay, I bet you if you met her on the street, she'd be really nice. If you were at a dinner in the park, she'd bring a great pie. You know, I'm sure she's a nice lady. But Leviticus 18:22 reads, "Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination."
Right.
All right? That was the meme that she put up. And while I particularly am of the mind that if you don't like gay sex, don't have sex with a gay person, Betty is seemingly seeking acceptance from other Facebook evangelists and admonishing gay people by using a passage from the Bible as her weapon of choice. Betty is taking the words attributed to Moses, and I say attributed because there's really no way of knowing this far down the line whether or not Moses actually wrote the words or simply spoke them to others before somebody finally jotted them down. For that matter, we have no way of knowing how many revisions those words went through in the oral telling and retelling of them, perhaps for centuries before they were jotted down, or how those words were altered through one translation after another. As far as anybody knows, Leviticus is supposedly more of God's laws than would fit on the tablets containing the Big Ten. But to Betty and other Facebook evangelists, whatever translation they're familiar with is the law, and in this case, it's aimed directly at today's gay population. Now, let me be clear on a point here. Ancient man in the time of Moses lacked the capacity to explain how or why things happened, and so they either blamed or gave credit to God for what they couldn't understand about the world around them. Those people could no more explain a fart than they could a volcanic eruption. And when it came to holding sway over the people, they instilled fear into the masses using the threat of religious revenge should people stray from the path of their leaders on earth. It was easy for garden variety ancient man to get up a head of steam and lead his people out of Egypt because the Pharaoh, while believing himself to be a god, wasn't their god. He was just a man. But make people fear their own god, and you've got an elemental grip on power. In the case of the greeny weenies, their god is the government, and make people fear their government by threatening them with global barbecues, and you can jack up taxes to bejesus, and they'll believe that's what it takes to turn down the thermostat. Now, that said, I decided to add a comment to Betty's Facebook post in an attempt to add knowledge to the conversation. Diane, I said, and I quote, "The problems here are many, not the least of which is the fact that citing Leviticus 18:22 alone means that it's been taken out of context. The next major issue is that the translation we know today is not accurate to the original Hebrew text. Remember, the section of Leviticus from which this comes is a section regarding incest, and indeed it contains a rather long list of forbidden incestuous relationships. That said, the much more accurate translation, taking into account the original Hebrew, would be, and I quote, "Sexual intercourse with a close male relative should be just as abominable to you as incestuous relationships with female relatives," unquote. And I finished my comment by saying cherry-picking, inaccurate translations to back one's personal beliefs and trying to pass such off as absolute doctrine is very problematic.
Well, you know, this misunderstanding in translations or misinterpreting translations has to do with the fact that the original text was written in ancient Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And through the years, translations and words change. The meanings change as man evolves. In other words, as he starts to understand nature basically around him. Why things happen.
Well, and as he starts to seek different ways to control other people. Look,
exactly.
Absolutely none of what I said was untrue. The original text, as Diane just said, was written in ancient Hebrew, and translations of it have caused it to read differently than it should. The passage is contained in a section in which every other supposed law relates directly to incest, assigning a totally different meaning to Leviticus 18:22 than was intended as per the original language is clearly taking that passage out of context to be used as a weapon against gay people today. But there is some good news contained in that passage for at least some gay people today. Lesbians, you're off the hook, as Leviticus 18:22 only refers to men. In other words, lesbians, feel free to frolic. Also, in Facebook evangelist Betty Seipert's thread, somebody named Lisa Guthrie, another member of the Facebook evangelical flock, chimed in by providing me with a long list of passages from the Bible that supposedly condemn gay people. There was Romans 1:27, Romans 1:28, Jude 1:7, 2 Peter 2:6, 1 Corinthians 6:9, and 1 Kings 14-24. Now, many of those passages dealt with Sodom and Gomorrah, which were most likely destroyed by a volcanic eruption. Not that ancient people could distinguish that from a fart. Lisa's aim was both at gay people and at me, since I dared to add historical context to the thread, which makes me a heathen, much in the same way that mentioning the receding ice ages makes one a climate change denier. I have long viewed the Bible as a source of great short stories. It's full of imagery, imagination, wonder, sex, violence, tales of revenge, war, conquest, perseverance, life, and death. It's political, social, full of intrigue, and more. I have always seen the Bible as a starting point if you're interested enough to seek further knowledge. Diane, if somebody is content with ignorant bliss, taking the Bible as the last and only word in blind faith is good enough. It's easier than thinking. But if one has any interest at all in further knowledge, one needs to look at the Bible with inquisitive eyes and then seek such knowledge.
Well, it's very interesting about the Bible and knowledge because the knowledge is very limited in scope because it was written by men at the time when knowledge was limited in scope. However, it doesn't mean that you can't try to find what the Bible is trying to say in regards to knowledge.
Well, you know, knowledge was, you know, knowledge, like you say, knowledge was limited to the ancient people who first started telling the stories that eventually became the Bible. But right. Knowledge was not a foreign concept to them.
No.
And the Bible does say things with regard to seeking knowledge. Proverbs 15:14. The heart of him who has understanding seeks knowledge, but the mouths of fools feed on folly.
Good quote, right?
Proverbs 18:15-24. An intelligent heart acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before the great. The one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. The lot puts an end to quarrels and decides between powerful contenders. A brother offended is more unyielding than a strong city, and quarreling is like the bars of a castle. Okay, then you got Proverbs 1:7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Ecclesiastes 7:12 says, "For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowing is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it." Then you got 2 Peter 1:5. "For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge." Oh, look, I too can quote from the Bible. And it's obvious from those passages that the Bible is not adverse to seeking knowledge. Diane, in fact, those verses seem to encourage the seeking of knowledge rather than accepting words on blind faith. To put a finer point on it, one cannot seek knowledge from closed-minded parrots squawking only the words you want to hear repeated to you by bird brains.
Well, you know, there's a perfect example of this, and I think you use it very well. And it has to do with blind faith and the whole story of Noah and the ark.
Well, I chose that because it's weather-related.
It is weather-related.
Blind faith is necessary to believe in the religion of climate change, too. So let me provide to you this case. To those who on blind faith accept that Noah gathered the ordained by God number of every animal on earth and put them onto an ark of certain dimensions. Knowledge begins with the understanding that Noah had no capacity to gather any number of every single animal on earth, as many lived in places inaccessible to him, and while the ark of the dimensions mentioned would indeed float, because of its length and being built from available trees of average size, it would not have survived the rough seas described in the story. Now then, an ark of the dimensions described in the Bible would have held roughly 55,000 tons of cargo before its weight sank it beneath the waves, even in still waters. Now that said, given the size described in the Bible and the number of critters that would scientifically be necessary to repopulate the world without the risk of genetic extinction, the ark was simply way too small. Isn't scientific knowledge interesting? According to the best scientific knowledge available, given the biblically dimensioned ark, Noah would have needed roughly 100 such arks to do what the Bible said he did. And none of that takes into account the volume that would have been taken up for food on what is reported to have been a 150-day voyage. Folks, I've got a YouTube video embedded in the blog at thenationalpatriot.com that gives you all the scientific numbers, okay? And they cite their scientific sources. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean Noah didn't exist? No. Does it mean that Noah didn't build an ark? No. Does it mean that Noah didn't float about for months with a bunch of animals? No. What it does mean is that the story of Noah, as recounted in the Bible, has been exaggerated and embellished over the eons of retelling. It means that while a flood probably did occur, it was more than likely a regional flood in nature, as were similar floods elsewhere, none of which would have completely covered the planet with water. Saying that God can make anything possible is the same as saying that the government, with enough tax dollars, can dial down the thermostat. Saying that land bridges created during the Pleistocene period is how Noah's petting zoo got around after the flood fails on a scientific level as the Pleistocene ended roughly 11,700 years ago, and said flood supposedly took place 4,350 years ago. Diane, I'm sorry to the Facebook evangelists, but the world is far more than 6,000 years old, and science tells us that the continents split apart roughly 200 million years ago.
Yeah. Well, there, unfortunately, there are people that still take it literally word for word and do not allow any searching for knowledge of truth. They take a book written by man. Remember, and this is something many of them forget, the only things ever written by the hand, by the finger of God, was the Ten Commandments given to the Jew Moses after the Exodus and they wandered the desert for 40 years. That first set was destroyed, remember, with the golden idol. And yet they think, they really believe that God sat down there at a desk and wrote this whole book.
I know.
And then suddenly it just appeared.
I know.
The
Listen.
Book was an oral history that man put down.
It was
an oral history between families, between friends, between people in different locations. And eventually the stories got put down. Eventually they got compiled into one book.
That's exactly right. So you got to ask yourself, is the story of Noah, like other stories in the Bible, a good story? Yep. And it's a starting point for gathering actual knowledge rather than relying on blind faith. That's not to say that the original telling of the story was inaccurate or embellished. That probably came later as the embellishments made the story more compelling. Translations may well have been either off or altered for effect by making its cautionary tale more of a threat to those who might question its basis in reality. Science, scientific knowledge, and common sense are not for the faint of heart, and they are equally undesired by Facebook evangelists as by believers of the climate change religion, because thinking is hard and blind faith is easy. Mm-hmm. Leviticus 18:22 was never intended to be about condemning gay people. It was originally about incest between male relatives. The problem with the religion of climate change is that it relies on the blind faith of its followers and their willingness to ignore facts and the truth. The same can and should be said regarding those of blind faith in any other religion. When it comes to providing wisdom or insight to either Facebook evangelists or climate change devotees, well, the Bible has a passage for that too. It's Proverbs 16:22, which states, "Good sense is a fountain of life to him who has it, but the instruction of fools is folly." If you're willing to have blind faith in your religion, it would be hypocritical to question anybody else's blind faith in their religion. That is the bottom line.
That is the bottom line. In other words, simply, what one person's truth does not have to be another person's truth at all. It could even go to the far end and say, your truth is my lie. Who are these people to say that their way and their way alone is the only way of thinking? Who's to say that I can search for knowledge in my way, but you can't search for knowledge in your way?
Well, I mean, it's their way or the highway, unless you're driving a car that runs on fossil fuel, apparently. I don't understand where these people are coming from. You know, look, I've always said the Bible is a great collection of short stories There mm-hmm. are things that you can discern from the Bible. There are things you can learn from the Bible. There are moral compasses in the Bible. But to take the Bible word for word is as foolish as taking the nonsense spewed by the religion of climate change word for word.
Right, and that's what these people do with the climate change aspect. They don't look at the facts. You cannot change the climate. You cannot control the sun. The sun controls our climate. That is a basic scientific fact. And until you accept that as fact, all you are is a blind following fool.
It just is the way it is. Folks, you can get the link to Blind Faith, Climate Change, and Facebook Evangelists by going to my blog, thenationalpatriot.com, or going to rspradio1.com. And I urge you, when you do that, not only to share the link everywhere, but watch the video that I've embedded in this on Noah's Ark. It will tell you exactly what you need to know about the absolute scientific possibility that that story is true.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's good basis for somebody gathering up some animals and whatever. But, you know, you got to remember the second part of Noah's Ark, the story of Noah, the pebbles and people sprung up.
I know.
They forget about that.
And if you take the story of Noah as absolute fact, and you discount throwing pebbles on the ground and they became people, then you run into a problem with Leviticus, as explained by Moses, because that is all about incest, and it would have taken incest to repopulate the world. However, there simply weren't enough people left on earth, according to the Bible, because it was just Noah's family. Genetic extinction would have taken over.
Not only that, let's go back a little.
I lost you there for a second. You want to go back to what?
Oh, let's go back even a little bit further. Adam and Eve, two people, two sons, but suddenly there's a whole world population.
I know. You know, I mean, yeah. You got to seek out the truth. You got to seek knowledge. The Bible says it's okay to do that. You know, and if you want to see the big picture, if you want to understand what those stories in the Bible are all about, if you want to understand why you can't throw other people's money at the weather and expect to change the thermostat on the planet, you've got to seek truth and knowledge.
Yeah, and you know what? If you follow the Bible word for word and the Bible is telling you it's okay to seek knowledge, but you refuse to seek knowledge, then you're not following the very book you claim to say you are.
But I'm the heathen for the article I wrote. You're the heathen for including Mother Nature in your article. Right Side Patriots, your heathen broadcasting network. You can get Diane's op-ed, Energy Truths v. Energy Lies, Mother Nature and All, by going to Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com. You can get my commentary, Blind Faith, Climate Change, and Facebook Evangelist, by going to my blog, thenationalpatriot.com. You can get them both by going to rspradio1.com. And a further reminder, don't forget, this coming Friday, September 2nd, big show, 1 hour version, and the entire hour is donated to our friend Mudar Zakharan, the Secretary General of the Jordanian Opposition Coalition, as he brings us up to speed on everything that's taking place in the Middle East today.
Yes. So with that, I'll say nighty-night.
Good night, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. We'll catch up with you and our good friend and guest Mudar Zakharan on Friday. Bye-bye.